So I was thinking, what could I do that would give me that sort of fulfillment and allow me to have some flexibility with my schedule and being a mom, and also feel fulfilled as a person? So I think I had the misconception that there would be some sort of moment or something would happen, or I would kind of be discovered, and that isn't realistic, and it didn't happen for me that way.
Welcome to the Mother Honestly podcast. This is your host, Blessing Adesio, founder and CEO of Mother Honestly. On this show, we interview ambitious women that are thriving in and beyond motherhood. Expect honest and real conversations that will encourage and inspire you to take actions on your dreams.
Good morning, mamas. This is Nicole Bopp, Chief Operating Officer of Mother Honestly. Welcome to the podcast today. With me in the studio is Alana Hopman, owner and founder of Annabelle Reese. How are you this morning?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. Welcome. I'm so excited to have you. We have had the pleasure of having some of your work done, and we're going to talk in a little bit about what Annabelle Reese does. But why don't you introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about your family and your background before we kind of get into everything.
Okay. I'm Alana Hopman, and I own a stationery and calligraphy company called Annabelle Reese. Annabelle and Reese are my daughters. Annabelle's 4 and Reese is almost 2. And my background is really not in art, even though now I'm an artist and a creative entrepreneur. It is in journalism. I went to journalism school at NYU and lived in New York for 10 years working for websites. So pretty much the opposite of calligraphy and handmade art.
So let's talk a little bit about that. You went off to college at Syracuse and then finished up at NYU and were working in the digital content space in New York City. You're living like every girl's like Sex in the City Manhattan dream. Met the nice guy, got married, and decided to move back to the Metro Detroit area to start a family. Once you got back here, were you still doing the thing that you were doing in New York?
So I was freelancing for a few different companies in New York, doing freelance writing and content strategy. And ultimately, it led me here to work in the automotive industry, which is where primarily I was finding opportunities. So I ended up working at a couple different ad agencies, working for automotive clients primarily, but also some nonprofits and other organizations.
And then you guys finally had decided to settle down, start the kid thing. When you got into that space and you were pregnant and you went to your executives at your company, how did they take the news that you were going to take maternity leave and kind of the whole process of being pregnant? How did that go for you in the corporate world?
In the corporate world, the company I was with was very supportive, pretty standard, I think, for what was available at the time. So companies weren't really doing extended maternity leaves or paternity leaves at the time. So it was, you know, I had my 6 weeks off and everyone was supportive of me taking off for doctor's appointments and all the things that come with a pregnancy. When I came back, though, the expectation was you are a full-time employee and you need to be here as such. And I was. And I was pumping at work on my breaks and doing drop-off to daycare and pickup. And it was insane. And I was trying to do it all. I saw that that was what the women I looked up to were doing. Everyone had to be a mom and a wife and, you know, do the rat race and kind of really try and do everything and be everything to everyone. And it wasn't working for me. I felt that I wasn't giving 100% to any part. I was effectively doing it all, but I was doing it all very, very badly.
So I know you just mentioned feeling like you were doing it all, but not doing it all well. And we're probably harder on ourselves. So probably from the outside, I don't think your daughter felt like you were doing a bad job. She was a little too young to really assess that probably. At work, probably thought you were doing a fine job too. But internally, what was that doing to you?
So it really just felt like a constant struggle. I had postpartum depression with both of my daughters. And
I don't think people appreciate what that does to
you. They really don't. It just makes everything exaggerated. So if I was having a hard day at work, it was the worst day at work.
Right.
If I had a rough night with my daughter, it was, oh my gosh, she's never going to stop crying. So all these extremes I was feeling, and I couldn't take it anymore. I was feeling so overwhelmed and so stressed, and like I wasn't doing a great job with anything. So I really needed to change and needed to figure something out. And the way that I did that was looking at my life and where I was spending most of my time. And in a traditional job, you're working 9 to 5. In the job I was in, I was working more like 24/7, it felt like. Not to mention being a mom is also a full-time job. So I didn't feel that the hours were being spent productively for me, and they weren't conducive to my lifestyle. So I'm a person who's definitely more productive at night. So being on an early morning call and being in the office at 8:30 was not who I wanted to be for the rest of my life. My brothers are both entrepreneurs. My younger brother started a company when he was still in college and has never worked a traditional job. He's always been an entrepreneur. And I sat down to lunch with him and he said, you know, we were talking about work and he said, work doesn't feel like work to me. Retirement is not the goal. And, you know, our parents' generation, that was the goal. It's sort of a countdown clock to retirement and when can I be done and live my life.
Right.
And my brother said, I am living my life every day. I don't want to stop working. So I was thinking, what could I do that would give me that sort of fulfillment and allow me to have some flexibility with my schedule and being a mom and also feel fulfilled as a person? And when I was in New York, I had started taking calligraphy classes as sort of a creative way to, you know, calm down and de-stress after a long day of being on my computer. I was always on my screen and always online, and it's a lot. So I needed something to do with my hands, and I started taking calligraphy classes. I found it to be very meditative and very relaxing, and I loved doing it. I loved the act of doing that.
Now, did you always... I am always fascinated by calligraphy. I think it's such a beautiful art form. I am a lefty who was taught cursive in the 70s, so I have the world's worst handwriting. Did you always have good handwriting? Was it something that attracted you because you already had a skill set for it, or you just love the beauty of the art form?
So I do have nice handwriting, and I've always been complimented on that.
Jealous.
thank you. It's sort of an interesting skill. Like, people will notice it in funny places, like if you're filling out a form at the doctor's office. People would ask me, oh, you must be a teacher or an architect. No, I'm actually a calligrapher. I handwrite for a living. And so it was a sort of a natural ability, but you definitely don't need to be someone with good handwriting to be a good calligrapher. And as I started learning different styles and developing this art, it fulfilled me in a way that nothing ever had in the work sense. So I needed to figure out a way to sort of marry that with work. So how could I make calligraphy my business and my job? Because it was something I was really passionate about and I enjoyed doing, and I could see myself doing it for a long time.
And so what was that aha moment when you realized this could be a thing? It's not just a hobby. It's not something I just enjoy that gives me pleasure and relaxation. It helps me de-stress. What was that conversation, that moment where you're like, oh my God, this is the great business idea?
So I don't really have an aha moment. And it was really a slower build. I practically couldn't leave my job and start doing this overnight. So it was really a slower transition. I ended up leaving the full-time agency world and still freelancing and working part-time in that space. So I was able to spend part of my time doing that and part of my time building up the calligraphy business. So I started networking and going to events and meeting people in the industry and really working nonstop on both. So financially, the agency world and the strategy work needed to still happen, while I was also building this sort of what started as a passion project for me.
And so as a budding entrepreneur, but someone who actually has a really pronounced content and marketing background, did you find that kind of helped you, at least in the early stages, launch Annabelle Reese?
100%. I built my website completely by myself. I am the owner of the company, but also the social media manager and the accountant and the bookkeeper and the public relations executive and all of the things that a person does when they're starting a business. I'm doing everything. So I do think my background in strategy and in content development certainly helped with that. And I'm not the best at asking for help. So I do tend to be a bit of a perfectionist and try and take care of all the things.
So you're not in complete recovery then.
I'm not in complete recovery. I am still a recovering perfectionist, which is an important distinction. And it was also just figuring out a way to scale and monetize the calligraphy portion so that I would be able to devote more time to that and eventually stop doing the freelance and the strategy work that I had been doing.
Have you gotten to that? You've obviously gotten to that place now.
I have, and it took about a year and a half before I was able to completely stop the other work and focus 100% on my business. So I think I had the misconception that there would be some sort of moment or something would happen or I would kind of be discovered, and that isn't realistic, and it didn't happen for me that way. And if it happens that way for other people, that's amazing, and I'm so happy for them. But, you know, it was a lot of hard work and a lot of balancing for a long time with two small children to get to the point where I am today.
And let's talk about, so the first child was born while you were in the corporate world and the corporate culture, but the second one was born of an entrepreneurial mom. How did that feel different, and what were the kind of pluses and minuses in both of those environments? Because I think people think as entrepreneurs, they're like, oh, you have all this freedom, but there's still some things that make motherhood difficult.
For sure. And going back to work with my first daughter was more of what a traditional mom returning from maternity leave looked like. I, you know, would pack my bag in the morning. I had my laptop and my pump, and I would pump on brakes, and she was at daycare, and that whole thing worked fine.
Right. And you had that 6 weeks, I'll call it off, and I'm putting that in air quotes.
Right.
Because you're now taking care of a brand new human, so you're not really off. But the only focus you had in those 6 weeks was figuring out motherhood.
Exactly. Which is a full-time job on its own, but one with no training, orientation, getting to know that it's just like, here's a baby, go home and make it live.
And so what does motherhood look like in maternity leave when you are an entrepreneur and the founder of your company?
I had a vision that it would be much calmer and more relaxed, and I would be at home nursing in the bed, and it was a little like that, but it was mostly not. It was mostly crazy because I am the only person in my business, so I wasn't able to be completely off. And my daughter was born in April, which is at the start of my busiest season. Calligraphy tends to be the busiest during wedding season in the summer and fall. So it was very difficult to balance that. And I was able to be home with her, and luckily she was an amazing sleeper in the beginning, much better than my first daughter. And so I was able to have a little bit more of a balance, but I didn't have the, you know, 6 weeks or 3 months away from my work. It was, you know, working from home, it surrounds you. It's all my supplies are there, and I see the client work, and so it's you never really can, like, shut it down and leave and go home because it is in your home.
And so how do you find, and we talk about this all the time, we never want to use the word balance, and it isn't about a balance. How do you find a formula that works for you where you feel like you're attentive to your daughters when you need to be attentive to your daughters and to your husband and to your home and to yourself and to your work when you do work from, because I know I have this problem, I work from home. And I can see all of it all the time. I can see my husband and my children and the laundry and the work piling up. What are you finding? And it's probably a work in progress. Your kids are still really young. That's really evolving because at this age, they're 2 and 4 now. Their lives change so quickly. Like, my kids' lives change in years. Like, you are going through different stages in months. So how do you kind of make it all work the best that you can in that environment now?
So I think in the beginning, I did think it was easier because my daughter was sleeping, you know, so many. In the beginning, they're basically still asleep from being in the womb. They're asleep for so much of every day. So I think I got a little spoiled. I'm like, look how much I'm getting done while she's napping. But then that stops. Like, they wake up and they need to be tended to. So I think that part was a little bit of a wake-up call. And realizing I am not able to do both. I had a vision in my head that I would be able to have my daughter, my baby at home while also doing work. And it's unrealistic for me. And I know some people can make it work, which is amazing. I felt that I was never giving her the time she needed or the work. And that's how mistakes happen and things get ruined or you miss a shipping deadline or, you know. So I didn't want to get into all of that. So my daughter is in part-time daycare. And I started that pretty early. She was about 6 months, and that helped just to have the balance and know that I had my time to work. I had my time to mom. And yeah, the balance, I'm glad you said that, because that's not a thing.
Right.
At all. And I think it's a big myth. And you see people who seem like they have it and they've done it and they've figured it out. And it's not the case.
Yeah, it's just a highlight reel on social media. Mm-hmm. And I think that the women, to me, who I say have it all, are just the women that are acknowledging that they're mired in the mess. When you can acknowledge the mess, you're all good.
Right.
Like it's when you're trying to be the highlight reel that you're kind of missing the point. So when you can be in the messiness and you're like, nope, this is it. I think you got it the most together. And I think acknowledging early on that it takes a village, that while the idea of being an entrepreneur meant you are more available to your daughters, there still need to be other people caring for them sometimes when you need to get things done. That's just the reality of the business world. Now, in your entrepreneurial job, and you talked about being in automotive and how it felt, especially in marketing, it is a 24/7 job. Mm-hmm. Clients need things happen. How do you feel about your hours now in Annabelle Reese?
I'm still working a ton, and it's more conducive, and it's divided in a way that fits my lifestyle better. But I think it's still work. It's still a full-time job, and that is something else that being an entrepreneur, as I said before, you're doing everything, so it doesn't really stop, and I can't call in sick. I don't have a backup person. Hopefully one day I will have a small team, but for now it's really just me. So I think the hours are certainly more conducive to my schedule. I'm able to be at pickup and drop off and do those things and go to school functions during the day, where before it wasn't as flexible. So in terms of scheduling, I do think I'm in a much better place.
Yeah, and it takes a village. And you have a husband who also has a fairly flexible schedule as well.
Yes.
So how did the two of you make that work so that you're kind of flexing in the same way so that you actually find time for each other as well?
So my husband also works from home, and it's really constant back and forth about our schedules. I feel like that's a lot of what we talk about, is just figuring out week to week, because we don't have a standard routine. It really depends on who has a meeting with Shay. If I have an evening client appointment, he's doing bedtime. And if he has an early meeting, I'm doing drop-off. And we really just kind of go back and forth and do this little scheduling dance pretty much every week.
So communication is key.
Yes, 1,000%.
Maybe you should come out with a planner.
It's on the list.
It's on the list. So going back to that conversation that you have with your brother, who is the entrepreneur, looking back now, do you feel like you get what he was saying, that you're not driving towards a retirement, that you're living your best life?
So I think the concept of, you know, having a job where it doesn't feel like work is a little bit of a myth. It certainly still feels like work. People will ask me, you know, oh my gosh, your job sounds so fun. And it's more fun than working where I was, and I'm more fulfilled with the work that I'm doing, but it certainly still feels like work. I do feel one thing that I've talked before about is redefining success in motherhood and in being a creative entrepreneur. So in my corporate job, success was pretty easy to identify and measure. So if I got a promotion, great. If I got great feedback from a client, amazing. You know, a salary bump, those are all things that I would kind of check off the list. Running my own business has been a little more challenging in terms of, what are those markers? What do they look like? What does success look like to me? Part of it is certainly I feel successful when I'm able to go to something at my daughter's school and not feel that overwhelming guilt that I'm missing a client meeting.
Right.
Because I've arranged it so that I can have my client meeting after the school function. So things like that, I think, are measures and markers that I've had to come to terms with, that they're not so black and white anymore.
Right. The titles, the accolades, that kind of stuff. Is your current boss not patting you on the back when you do a job well done?
Some advice that someone gave me when I started this business was, don't be the worst boss you've ever had. And oftentimes I really can be, and it's a little crazy.
I had an experience back in September. I actually got to meet Rachel Hollis, and she said to me, do you stop to – now I'm going to well up in tears. do you stop and acknowledge your successes? Do you take the time to celebrate the win?
As women, I don't think any of us are really really great at that. And there's so much pressure on us to do everything and be everything to everyone. And I certainly don't take the time to look back and see, wow, I've built a business with these little babies and it's a sort of a legacy for them. And I am growing each year and earning more and growing as a business, offering more services and things like that. I do not take the time to reflect on that and really appreciate it, or the work that I've put in and the all-nighters and the insanity. It's so silly to think about it now, like how things happen, and the way that they happen is really following a path, and it's really fated to go a certain way and to do a certain thing. And I feel like I am in the space where I am meant to be now as a mother, as a wife, as a business owner, for sure. But getting to that point, I certainly did not stop along the way and say, you're doing great. Good job. You need a raise.
And I think we should. And it's hard because sometimes when we work by ourselves and for ourselves, there's no one to even have the conversation with, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes our spouses, and they're like, hey, babe, that's awesome. You know, is dinner on the table? We all have those moments. But I think I'm trying so much harder since I had that encounter with Rachel. I'm like, you know what? I do need to stop and celebrate those things because they become so much more meaningful. So let's take a minute. We're going to celebrate those successes because you've had, I mean, obviously every year over year, your revenue has grown. Mm-hmm. You have sent your beautiful calligraphy work all over the country. Mm-hmm. You have been featured in the magazine The Knot for some of your work as well. And you've got some big plans kind of rolling around for 2020. So let's talk about what those are.
So right now, my business is primarily focused on three different sections. So I do events, which is the largest part of the business. So weddings, corporate events, I do event branding, custom invitation design, all of that sort of thing. I also have on-site services where I will come to a store or an event and do live calligraphy, which people really love to watch. Everyone likes to watch like their name being written with a fancy pen.
Yeah. And I think you started this in kind of a really perfect moment that craft, and I don't mean arts and crafts like you're at Michael's, but craftsmanship has really become something notable that people are looking for, the handmade, the process of really what old school manufacturing was, whether it's a leather good or a watch or a bicycle or anything custom made, that you have hit that. You have really found a moment in time where people are really looking for that craftsmanship. So I've got to imagine that that's a growing part of your business is doing
for
that.
Sure. It is. And even though it's certainly simpler to have something printed and there's a lot of different calligraphy style fonts and ways to do this digitally, there is certainly still a market that is looking for something done by hand, which is amazing and beautiful, and people appreciate it. And I use a lot of local suppliers and local printers for my paper goods and different printing styles, and people do appreciate the craftsmanship, I think, the craftswomanship.
That's right. And what is your which is your third part of your business? So you do a lot of custom invitations and events. You do on-site.
And my product line. So in the next 2 years, I'm developing and really curating my product line to be sold wholesale to retailers around the country. So it's in its infancy now. I have a limited number of different products now, but that is what is on the docket for the next couple of years.
And that's the part that's true, because you can't be at every store customizing things across the country. You can only do so many events and custom invitations in any given year, at least by your own hand. But that's the part that's really scalable. Like, that's really the opportunity to go above and beyond and really see this business grow.
Yeah,
and you got to be excited that that's kind of the part that also demands a little bit less of your personal time, so that once that starts rolling, there's the ability to kind of step away and focus on different things.
Yeah, so the business has really evolved. In the beginning, I was addressing envelopes, doing so much by hand. Then I sort of developed more of the custom paper goods and invitations, which combined graphic design and different printing styles. The on-site sort of came about. A few stores reached out to me, and that sort of happened naturally, which was amazing. But really, when we're talking about scaling the business in the future, the products are where I see it going, for sure.
Absolutely. That's so exciting. So 2020 is the goal for that right now. It's under development. That's awesome. Very cool. Where can people find Annabelle Reese? So on social, on the web?
So AnnabelleReese.com, A-N-N-A-B-E-L, Reese.com. I'm on Instagram at Annabelle.Reese and Facebook Annabelle Reese as well.
And there are already some limited products available on the website for people to purchase.
Yes.
Perfect. And typically, someone wants your services. How far out do you want to get involved? So someone's not calling you like, so I need like 50 invitations by Saturday and it's Thursday. Like typically when you work with clients, what are you looking for? Ideally, and not everything's ideal. And if you have time for the person who calls on Thursday and needs something Saturday, I'm sure you're like, got it. Typically, though, when people want to hire you for your services, what are you looking for time frame wise?
Typically for weddings and special events, I like to get involved as soon as possible. You know, save the dates, go out 8 to 10 months before the wedding. Invites go out 6 to 8 weeks before. So the development of the products and all the custom goods really takes a lot of time. So to reach out earlier is always better. And for just, you know, holiday cards a few months ahead. And I also do a lot of custom artwork. So if you want vows written out in calligraphy to frame on the wall or song lyrics or things like that, just the sooner the better.
And you do all kinds of things. We've had her do work for things. So you did signage for us for when we did photo booths. You have done amazing vinyls that we had that were able to put on the floor and on the wall surfaces that had really meaningful messages about Mother Honestly. So you are full service when it comes to language, really. The written language is however someone wants it. You have the ability to put that down on fabric, on paper, on boxes, anything, correct?
Yeah, and I like to think that my journalism background kind of marries this in a way that I'm still working with writing and language and
making one of things grammatically correct.
Yes, correct. Using the right "your" is a big deal for me.
There.
Yeah, and I think the beauty of this job is that I'm able to be a part of people's special moments and really choose the clients that I connect with. And can make an impact for and make a memorable piece of art for.
And while you are Detroit-based, you are available globally for the work that you do.
For sure.
Absolutely. We love that.
UPS goes everywhere.
They do, don't they? They make everyone's life so much easier. And so we are kind of upon the holiday season now. As people are looking to plan for next year, is the best way to reach you? Is there a contact on your website?
Yes.
Perfect. Perfect. Yep. Well, thank you for joining us today.
Of course.
Sharing
thank
your story.
You.
I really appreciate it. And happy holidays to you.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Thank you, Mama, for joining us on the Mother Honestly podcast. I am your show manager, Kristen Baffo, asking that you please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. And for more resources, visit us at motherhonestly.com or follow us on Facebook and Instagram.